We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Welcome to the Solid Verbal.
The Solid Verbal.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
I've heard so many players say, well, I want to be happy. You want to be happy for a day? Eat a steak.
It's that woo woo!
And now, Dan and Ty.
Welcome back to the Solid Verbal, boys and girls. My name is Ty Hildebrandt. As always, I am joined by the one, the only, still the incomparable Dan Rubenstein out there in snowy, blustery, still wintry Chicago, Illinois. Dan Rubenstein, how are you?
Not bad. It's in the 30s, tropical 30s right now in the Chicagoland area, and I just finished a decent amount of icing of my arm, because I'm always looking to get that lactic acid out, Ty, and I don't know if that fits in with our theme today, where you just got to out with the old, in with the new, but I'm really trying to take care of myself, I'm trying to hydrate, I'm trying to sleep, and you know, this is not just an off-season to reflect, it's an off-season to better ourselves in advance of the 2022 season. It's never too early to start working on improving yourself. How about that?
That's a great, great motivational speech at the top of this episode. As always, the Solid Verbal is driven by Geico. If you like the show, if you're just finding us for the first time, hello, welcome, how are you? Don't forget to subscribe and follow the show. Also, don't forget to rate a review wherever it'll let you. All that stuff really does help. It helps us amplify the message. It helps us get in front of more people who might also be interested in college football stuff this crazy cold time of year in early February.
Unless you live in an awesome place. Unless you live in an awesome warm place, then things are just still good.
You can also go on out to verballers.com, verballers.com. If you really like the show, if you really want to support the content, You can become a certified or premium verballer. That's going to give you access to a whole host of bonus features, not the least of which is early access to all of our shows, video access to pretty much every show that we do. We post them out there for our premium verballers. Of course, you get access to the Discord, as well as some bonus stuff that we are working on, which we will soon take the bubble wrap off.
Yeah, it's real soon, right?
We're very excited about, yes.
It's a matter of days until something new is sort of released into the wild. I love it.
And last but not least, you've only got the weekend now to get your name in the hat for solidgiveaway.com. We are giving away a signed Reggie Bush mini helmet for free.
Oh my God. What a deal.
You just need to go through a few quick and easy steps. Again, it's free. If you like the show, if you're a Reggie Bush fan, like pretty much everybody's a Reggie Bush fan, maybe not some Notre Dame people that were in the stadium with me on that hallowed day in 2005, but everyone else is a Reggie Bush fan, you can get the signed Reggie Bush mini helmet. You go on out to solidgiveaway.com. We draw the winner on Valentine's Day.
Aw. And listen to our previous show, College Football, How's Your Marriage? That deals with all things relationships between coaches and schools right now. We don't do the new coaches because it's still a honeymoon period and it's hard to gauge because they're all over each other. But otherwise, we went across the sport and looked at the relationship status in terms of a marriage. Hot and heavy, distant, separate beds. Couldn't recommend it enough. Had a great time.
Dan, we're playing a bit of a game on today's show, are we not?
Mm-hmm. We sort of, yeah. We're looking at teams that went 2-10 last year. To stay thematic, it's not a Valentine's Day show because not a lot to love about teams that went 2-10, but there's a decent enough chance that you're listening to this on the day in which it's released, which is 2-10. So people like to crack jokes about Scott Frost Day, which was actually, I think, September 1st, but like, oh, it's May 7th, you know, Nebraska 5-7, 6-6, whatever. It's Scott Frost Day, 4-8, Brian Kelly Day, whatever. We're deciding to take that theme of specific dates and taking it one step further. So with a 2-10 release, we are going to look at teams who went 2-10 in 2021 and just check in, right? I don't know if you're the type of person, Ty, you have friends that perhaps you don't see all that often. Maybe they live in a different part of the country. I think it's really nice to just check in with people. Phone call, especially, you know, when people aren't traveling as much as they used to be. A text, hey, bud, just seeing how life is. I'm a big fan of that. Mm-hmm. So I want to do a check-in. This is not a 2021 year in review. This is not a 2022 preview. It's just like, how are things going? What's going on with you, New Mexico State,
yeah, and,
Indiana?
And look, yeah, there are some interesting factoids here. So you
totally
looked up factoids, and we're going to go back and forth a little bit on those factoids. And if nothing else, you will come out of this show with a reason to care.
I think so.
About these teams. Because, look, it's a long season. Clearly, it was not a successful season for many of these teams, okay? Otherwise, we wouldn't be talking about them on February the 10th. But there are interesting nuggets here. Interesting nuggets,
oh, yeah,
that we're going to get into and talk about.
Absolutely interesting nuggets. And the 210 freeway I looked up, Ty. I'm always, you know, I'm just going around the edges in the Pasadena area, Southern California, in an area where freeways can be pretty terrible. You can move on the 210. Traffic is, you know, not bad. That's all I have.
Before we get into our game du jour.
Yes.
Did you happen to see what's going on in the whole Oklahoma Sooner fan community?
Man, I can't keep up.
In the whole Oklahoma Sooner state, Dan.
Yeah. Yeah. So we had the governor Stitt, right?
Correct. Yeah.
Take a brief shot at like who would ever move from Norman, Oklahoma to Southern California.
He did that, by the way,
Riley. Yeah.
On the floor of the state assembly during the state of the state address.
Mm-hmm.
Great state of Oklahoma in this case. Quote, can you imagine leaving a place like Norman, Oklahoma for Southern California? I mean, who would do that? He joked,
right,
to scattered laughs and applause. End quote. You'll get that in a minute.
Yeah.
We got that pretty quick, Governor Stitt.
He's a Poke, by the way. He's an Oklahoma State alum, but
oh,
he knows who votes in the Sooner State. It's not the Cowboy State. It is the Sooner
the
State.
The focus groups definitely handed him that one in a manila envelope.
Yeah,
and I'm sure that's playing well on the TBOW train. You can look that one up in your college football comment threads. The Oklahoma Sooner community is, we joked on our Olivia Rodrigo theme show, go and look that one up.
Sure.
Just still not really taking the Lincoln Riley thing all that well. And I get it. Look, this is the world in which we live. It's college football. It's tribal. There is animosity. It seems as if this one's been taken a little bit harder than most. Not saying
sure,
it's without reason, but for sure, the fact that we're talking about it now is notable. Lincoln Riley, for his part, sort of taking veiled shots back. Quote, we didn't take players from Oklahoma. We took players from the transfer portal.
Right.
Once a player gets in a portal, they are open to any school in the country. We'd be crazy not to look at it.
Mm-hmm.
And now help our football team. Quote, these are guys we recruited. We got to know their families. All of a sudden, they were enough for us to take at Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm.
But now we would not give them a chance just because we're at a new spot. That part never really made sense to me. These are players we feel like can help our program. to get to where it needs to be, end quote, Lincoln Riley. Not taking guys from Oklahoma. No, Lincoln. Caleb Williams is in the transfer portal. We had nothing to do with Oklahoma.
Right.
We're just sort of doing what we need to do to extricate him from said portal, which is a little bit like limbo in Inception.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to bring him back amongst us here in the college football ranks, Dan.
Yeah, it's all interesting, and we've had this conversation before where the method by which a coach or representatives of a school could reach out to people who could be in contact with players and having conversations along the lines of, look, we're not recruiting so-and-so. But if so-and-so happened to find themselves in the portal, perhaps in a different world, we'd be interested. And so Lincoln Riley has, and Lincoln Riley's no different than college football coaches across the country, of course. It's a new thing because I can't think of another instance in which a top flight college football coach leaves a top flight program and that quarterback with top flight potential who is starting for said program decides to follow him to new program. That's new. And so the emotions that Oklahoma fans feel, to me, are pretty justified.
Sure.
Because they are in a new place within the sport, and they are squarely in that new place. And I'm not going to tell you that Notre Dame fans, at least until the Marcus Freeman hire, didn't feel similar things about Brian Kelly, because Oklahoma and Notre Dame are not places that coaches voluntarily leave. So that's also kind of new and novel. And
sure.
I'm not going to tell you that Oregon fans, perhaps myself included, don't feel the same way about Mario Cristobal voluntarily leaving, especially after Willie Taggart left voluntarily a few years ago, that Oregon fans are loud and saying, oh, we're better off with Dan Lanning. I don't know what we are. I don't know. Dan Lanning's never been a head coach. Brent Venables has never been a head coach. And so there's a lot of...
I have never, ever been happier.
To not just Oklahoma.
Is that euphoria?
Fans.
What is that?
That is from you, Sydney Sweeney, by the way. Having her selfie. Like just, I don't know if you watched White Lotus, but she's also on Euphoria.
Yeah. Yeah.
She's popping as an actress. Her career is popping. So, yeah, still a lot of unbridled emotions online, offline with Lincoln Riley. And look, again, what he is doing. And I don't know if people use this strategy in relationships because Valentine's Day still is coming up at the time we're recording this.
Yeah.
I don't know if you did this with Kate. I didn't do this with Jody. And I don't know if you know people who have done this where if you are interested in somebody, but they themselves are attached to somebody else, does anybody let it be known to a mutual friend? Look, I'm not asking Jessica out. All I'm saying is if she were to find herself as a single woman,
yeah, I might,
I could see myself becoming
interested. Yeah.
Right. Mm. I'm sure people have floated that and it's worked. I don't have experience doing it, but I kind of admire the strategy that instead of trying to go after somebody who is taken, saying to a mutual party, look, I hope she's happy. But if she's not, and considering, there could be a world in which we go get dim sum sometime soon. I admire that. I admire that tact. It's sleazy for sure.
Yeah.
But there is a certain amount of charm to it. Unless you are losing Caleb Williams. Yeah.
This is a world built on plausible deniability.
Yeah.
And especially in college football, especially as it relates to the coaching carousel, apparently now, as it also relates to the transfer portal. So I, for one, am thrilled that we have arrived at this brave new world where Oklahoma fans will be sniping at Lincoln Riley forevermore. I don't expect this is going to go away anytime soon. And
no.
I hope that Oklahoma fans understand I'm not trying to say that at their expense. But at the end of the day, you and I run a podcast. We are in the content business. It is February. And dog, let me tell you, we don't always have scandalous things at this juncture to talk about. So at least on that level, I am very happy that this little blood feud, if you will, is now a thing in the college football ether.
Yeah. And you know what? I love where Oklahoma's heading. I don't blame Oklahoma fans for being excited over a new direction and have a defensive-minded head coach. And you bring in Ted Roof, who, he'll wear some polos.
Ted Roof. We're trying to make him feel better. Don't talk about
no,
Ted
No, I know, but Dillon Gabriel comes in, like, maybe the greatest consolation quarterback prize of all time, given the emotions that are happening in Norman right now. And so, look, this is just a new reality that probably most off seasons we're going to find ourselves with fan bases saying,
I have never, ever been happier.
Yeah, that's great.
There is a world in which Dillon Gabriel wins the Heisman.
Yeah. Well, at least outperforms Caleb Williams at USC. Sure.
It's a very plausible world in which Dillon Gabriel goes nuts and wins the Heisman. And yeah. I am here for that content.
It's kind of in the universe of NIL. It's kind of an equivalent conversation to when, NFL fans or baseball fans or NBA fans are like, would you rather have this player at $8 million or this star at $44 million? You're like, ooh, what? Like, would you rather have Dillon Gabriel and Jeff Lebby or Caleb Williams without an offensive line? Like, it's one of those. Like, if you are an Oklahoma fan, you kind of can have that. You can bring up that question among your peers. And I like that. That's great.
It's like one of those salary cap games you play over at ESPN.com.
Yeah. Bill Bedenbaugh. Yeah. Oh, it's interesting.
We'll see what happens for sure. Watch this space. More to come.
Yeah.
Elsewhere in college football news, we don't have a whole lot to discuss, but Michigan has picked another branch, another fruit off of that Baltimore Ravens coaching tree, Dan.
Correct.
The Harbaugh is passing coaches back and forth. First, it was Mike McDonald. He's going back to the NFL. Now it is Jesse Minter. Jesse Minter, son of former Notre Dame name, Rick Minter.
Yeah, Cincinnati too. Yeah.
Right. Jesse Minter is 38. He was previously a defensive assistant with the Baltimore Ravens. He had a few other stops before that, but coming up to Ann Arbor now to run the Michigan defense in this renewed era of Jim Harbaugh as head football coach.
Absolutely. I saw, and he's younger. He's in his 30s, right?
38. Yeah, 38.
Georgia lost their defensive backs coach to Miami, who was very good at West Virginia, was very good at Georgia. His name is Ade, I think is how you pronounce his last name, Ade or Adai. And that is being looked at as a very strong hire for, I'm going to get his pronunciation, Jameel Adai, I don't know. Jameel Adai, there it is. I want to get things right. Miami with Kevin Steele, and now a strong secondaries coach. He brought in Joe Salavea from Oregon to coach the defensive line. Kevin Steele's a really good coordinator. That was made official, and so this appears to be a stronger and stronger staff. We'll see what happens, but if you remember back, I mean, this is sort of relevant with the Super Bowl coming up. It was Kevin Steele who was like the one defensive mind who could keep the LSU offense with Joe Burrow in check. And so going against perhaps some less than lethal offenses in the ACC.
How dare you? How dare you besmirch ACC offense?
I don't know. I watched a good amount. There are pieces.
Leary's coming for you, man. Like, he's coming for you.
I don't know how we feel about North Carolina moving forward and Syracuse moving forward and Boston College and Pitt moving. Like, we'll see.
Bill Djurkovic will haunt your dreams for that. He will.
But no, I think Miami's in a really nice place. It's going to be a matter of recruiting depth, especially along that defensive line and just the numbers game. But I think Miami should be in a good place. And it's just going to be a matter of once they have the roster they want, how do they avoid losing the stupid games in stupid ways? Because that, I think, is the next piece for both the head coach and the school itself.
That is so much the case at so many different schools around the country. Just trying to stay out of your own way, right?
Correct. So, no, it's a fascinating time. By the way, one of these teams that we're going to talk about, these 2-10 teams from 2021, still coordinator-less. Still without an offensive and defensive coordinator. Do you have a guess as to which of these teams is that program without coordinators?
Well, first off, do we have any other news? I don't think we have any news.
No. I think there's always news within the sport, but something that's worth talking about in length, no, I don't think so.
All right. So here is our game.
Yes.
Our game is we went through in quasi-painstaking detail.
Yeah.
and looked at all the teams that went 2-10 because today is 2-10. We're dropping this on February the 10th, 2-10.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We're very literally minded like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're looking for creative ideas. Dan, you happened upon this one. You did a bunch of research. How are we going to do this? First off, you have a sound. Can you play that sound to really set the mood? Double dare. Okay. Yeah. Do you dare to have double digit losses?
Yeah. A number of teams covered in 2021 slime who are looking to clean off and move forward with the challenge that is college football. So of these teams, do you have the list in front of you?
I have
the
list in front of
me. Teams
who
went 2-10?
I do. I do.
So of these teams, who do you believe should annually win the most games, both from Power 5 and Group of 5 and an independent team?
Here is the list. Let me read the list off.
Okay.
This isn't in alphabetical order, but
okay.
Tulane, South Florida, Kansas, Indiana, New Mexico State, Akron, UNLV, Vanderbilt, and Arkansas State. Some real heavy hitters here.
Yeah.
Real heavy hitters in the college football world. Who should win the most? Indiana should win the most.
You think of these teams, Indiana, should be the program most closely resembling an 8-4 program?
If we're talking Power 5 teams, let's say, I would say Indiana. Okay. If we're talking everybody else, South Florida's in a pretty good spot for talent. There's no reason they should be 2-10.
Right.
8-4, Arkansas State's been at 8-4 before.
The answer is Arkansas State, and I don't think it's a particularly difficult question. South Florida was left in a terrible, terrible spot under Charlie Strong. They were not a perennial bowl team. Arkansas State went to a bowl game every year between 2011 and 2019. They were an 8-4 program. They were squarely an 8-4 program under Blake Anderson. And if they continue to recruit the way that they have under Butch Jones, number one, I think it was a number one class in the Sun Belt, there's no reason they shouldn't be winning 8 games a year at Arkansas. Arkansas State's a place that, again, we'll go back to the old Bill C thing. Sometimes it's not the coach, it's the school. Arkansas State is a school that has been set up. They hire strong coaches who leave pretty quickly. Gus Malzahn, Brian Harsin, Hugh Freeze. Their school's set up to win games. And I think the Red Wolves should, once again, be a 6-7-8-9 win program. I don't think there's a good reason why they shouldn't be, especially with how hard they appear to be hitting the portal and the recruiting trail. So of these teams, they're the most obvious to me that what's standing in their way between where they are now and an 8-win program. It seems feasible.
So you, in the research you did, are you going to ask me factoids and I'm going to guess? Is that the way this is going to go?
Sure. I mean, let's start with Arkansas State though.
Okay. We threw them out already.
Right.
Here's what's interesting about Arkansas State. So their only two wins this past season were against Central Arkansas and Louisiana Monroe.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever. 5-1 score losses for the Red Wolves.
Yeah.
And that's just one of those things that you look at as we're talking about Miami trying to get out of their own way. There are a couple teams on this list where the season could have had a much, much different complexion had a few of these games gone their way. Now, the difference between 2-10 and 7-5 is pretty big. It still doesn't portend to a great college football team, but 5-1 score losses against Memphis, Tulsa, Louisiana, Georgia State, and Texas State. Some decent teams there. Memphis went to a bowl game. Louisiana won the conference. Georgia State won its bowl. These are not terrible teams, and Arkansas State was right there with them until the very end.
Yeah, decent talent at quarterback and Lane Hatcher and James Blackman last year, the Florida State transfer. They bombed it successfully downfield somewhat, but it was a terrible defense and it was wildly inconsistent on offense. It was a shootout loss, by the way, to Memphis. It was 55-50.
Yeah.
I believe. So as I mentioned, number one recruiting class in the Sun Belt. They hit the portal pretty hard and I'm optimistic in Arkansas State just because it's talent acquisition. The class of the conference loses their head coach in Louisiana. I'm great with seeing an improved Arkansas State team, but they still have a ways to go with how bad especially that defense was. So I don't know if they're going to a bowl game this coming year, but they should look improved.
They should. One of the other things I looked at when we were going through and trying to analyze these teams, how did they fare preseason SP Plus versus postseason SP Plus?
Right.
And Bill C, this was one of the teams where he was fairly accurate. Arkansas State preseason 98th. Mm-hmm. After the bowl games, they clocked in at 119. So
yep,
a little bit worse than what we had originally thought. But I think reason for optimism. Butch Jones got a lot of crap for the way it went down at Tennessee. Before that, he was a pretty good coach. And yeah. I have faith here that he can help lead them out of this 2-10 place.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
You want me to give you another
hint.
Nugget or factoid about a team?
Yeah. Really set that move. I like that. That's good. Thank you.
Lost literal dozens of players to the transfer portal, but are bringing in guys from schools like UCLA, Ole Miss, Auburn, Kentucky, Cal, and Missouri. A Power 5 team with no Power 5 wins.
You're saying this is a Power 5 team with no Power 5 wins?
Correct. One of the most important things as a Power 5 team to beat other Power 5 teams.
So you're listing a Power 5 team with no Power 5 wins, yes.
Yeah, correct.
The only one that would rise to that level would be Indiana.
Correct. Ding, 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 ding. Rough year. Watch.
Man.
Not an entertaining 2-10. A really depressing 2-10 where everything sort of went wrong on one side of the ball, and that'd be offense. And there was enthusiasm heading into the season. They were in the top 20 in the initial poll?
In the initial poll, but in the initial SP Plus,
yeah,
Indiana was 28th per Bill C's numbers. You know where they finished?
Way lower. 100 something.
Was it 2 or 3 digits?
3.
They finished 100th.
Oh, right on the nose.
100th.
Okay.
On the nose. I'm with you. Okay, so their two wins were against the Idaho Vandals and mm-hmm. Western Kentucky. Beat Bailey Zappi.
Yeah.
What was concerning to me is, as you said, most of it wasn't really entertaining. They had the issue with Michael Penix, you know, going down again, but pretty much got destroyed in every game. Outside of the Michigan State game, which was close, and the Maryland game, which was a field goal,
mm-hmm.
they pretty much got dismantled every game that they lost. And
correct.
If you're an Indiana fan, like you said, I mean, they hit the transfer portal pretty hard, and they had a lot of guys leave as well. I don't know, man. How do you feel if you're a Hoosier fan going into the 2022 campaign? Is there a reason for optimism here?
They made some coaching changes. They hired, they have new coordinators on both sides of the ball, but they hire Walt Bell, who's most recently a failed UMass head coach, but I think has a decent reputation as an offensive mind to take over the offense. They bring in Connor Bazelak from Mizzou. They lose one of their best, if not their best assistants to Notre Dame, I believe, Declan McCullough, the running backs coach, who is pretty well regarded. So, yeah, I don't. It's hard to see with how down that offense was last year, where quarterbacks were not protected, and when they were protected, they were not all that good. There were drops. There was just not much that could be done. Not much in the way of adjustments. I think they scored 20 points in a Big Ten game once, I believe. You might have their scores in front of you. That was against Maryland.
Yeah. Right.
So there's such a vast and long road ahead on offense. Hopefully Connor Bazelak can help sort of bridge that gap in a respectable way and do for Indiana what a number of at least competent, if not interesting, quarterbacks have done for a number of programs. You look at like what Peyton Ramsey did for Northwestern a couple of years ago. Like, they weren't good, but they were like 80s, something like that, where they were merely below average and not a terrible embarrassment. And if you look at Tom Allen teams, they usually improve. He makes changes, he adjusts in off seasons, but it's typically the defense, given his background, that is making that big improvement. And defense wasn't really the problem. The problem is a combination of not having an offense and playing in the Big Ten East. I don't know if you've looked at their schedule.
I'm looking at it right now.
Brutal. They've got two like pretty brutal stretches, including the end of the season. I think it's Michigan State, Penn State, Ohio State, or something like that in consecutive weeks. It's a real tough spot. So they really need just a complete overhaul, which they've done along the coaching staff. And they lost what they lost in the portal, but they also brought in, as I mentioned, a ton. So you're hopeful that what works for a lot of our parents and their tech issues is going to work for Indiana. And that's just a hard reboot.
Yeah. Yeah. Hard reboot. I'm looking at the schedule. It closes out, as you said, Penn State at Ohio State at Michigan State. That's tough.
Yeah.
And then there are other spots in there that could be particularly tricky. We don't know what Cincinnati's going to look like. I think Cincinnati will take a step back.
Yeah. The other side of the home and home. Yeah.
But that game's at Cincinnati. Program's done well. Luke Fickell's a good coach. They're at Nebraska the week after that. Who knows what we're going to get with Nebraska?
Mm-hmm.
Then they go to, they're come back home, but then they square off against Michigan the week after that. So it's a couple stretches here for Indiana where they're going to have to pull it together. I don't know. 2-10, though.
It's, yeah.
2-10, that left a mark last season. That caught a lot of folks by surprise.
Yeah, and I think Tom Allen just got paid as well. And so I think the expectations were like, hey, run a bowl team. You need to have this team in bowls more often than not. And so I think there's ramped up pressure in Bloomington. And I don't know if it's fully fair, given who Indiana is competing against, both on the field and on the recruiting trail. But I don't know how many more seasons of full offensive incompetence that Indiana will put up with, because it's inexcusable. You can be incompetent on one side of the ball if you're winning games. But if you're losing games in the manner in which they're losing and you just look fully lost, you can't
get blown out. Just can't get dismantled the way they did. All right, who's next? No. Give me another nugget.
And you can't do it in the wake of hope. You can't do it in the wake of their 2020 season.
Correct.
That seemed magical. Okay. This school has been traditionally truly bad and awful, and it's always going to be an uphill climb no matter who is the head coach. And they have a new coach, and a part of his hiring strategy is like, I'm just going to hire a bunch of 26-year-olds, 28-year-olds, who are just GAs from major places, LSU, Oregon, places like that. I'm actually not positive about LSU, but Oregon is one of them. And we're going to go in on youth and creativity, and perhaps this coach feels especially comfortable with a scrappy group of underdogs as a head coach rather than spending time at a major program.
Are you talking about Clark Lee and Vanderbilt?
I'm not, but it could apply.
It could apply to Clark Lee and Vanderbilt, could it not?
No, I don't know if the GA from Oregon thing. It's Joe Moorhead in Akron.
Okay.
Because of obviously Joe Moorhead's connection to the Ducks, having spent the last two seasons there. But we'll get to Clark Lee. Akron went 4-8 a few years ago and fired Terry Bowden.
Mm-hmm.
Terry Bowden is the best modern coach in Akron's history since they became a Division I /FBS school. He's the only one to win both 7 and 8 games in a season for Akron.
Correct.
They fire Terry Bowden after going 4-8 to move in a new direction. It does not work out. Joe Moorhead is brought in, perhaps feeling wistful for his days back at Fordham. Scrappy group of underdogs where he didn't have much in the way of equipment or support or anything like that. I'm not saying Akron is necessarily in that place, but just in looking at their recent results on the field, they actually had some promising play from a quarterback last year. Zach Gibson, I believe his name. He takes off. He transfers and goes to Georgia Tech. And they're just they're all in. They're all in on the youth movement in the coaching ranks, and then they bring in some guys from the portal. They're trying. And the nice thing about it for Joe Moorhead is there's virtually no pressure to win right now at Akron with how down they've been. I think they've beaten exactly zero non-Bowling Green FBS schools in the last like 3 years. Right. They're in a down place, the Zips. So you understand why they're in this 2-10 conversation. But look, you got transfers coming in from places like Pitt, Memphis, Syracuse, LSU, Minnesota. I'm not saying Akron's going to be in a good place, but I'm saying I think within a couple years, Joe Moorhead, if they keep hitting the portal in a shrewd way, they can become a tough out in the MAC. I think they can be.
You think Joe Moorhead will be there in a couple years if they start to become a tough out in the MAC? You think he's going to hang out at Akron?
Yeah, I think there is something about the location of Akron, which is not terribly far from where he's from in Pittsburgh, that I think geographically he likes the area, and I think he might just prefer being a big fish in a small pond. Some guys are it's not necessarily the most common thing. If the Pitt job opens up and he takes Akron to become a 9-3 program, and you're like, well, this makes sense, but no, I he's been to the SEC, he's been to the Big Ten, he's been to the Pac-12. I'm sure he would have had options to be a major program coordinator and put himself in a better position to again become a head coach at a bigger place than Akron. But this is what appealed to him. So I don't know. Makes sense.
Akron last season, the Zips beat Bryant, which is a football program, I assure you, and Bowling Green. They probably should have beaten Ball State as well.
Right.
We will get to Ball State at some point else during this long off season.
Yeah.
Bill C hit this one pretty much on the nose. He had them at 124 preseason. After the bowls, they were 127.
Yep.
So this was not expected to be a good team. It was not a good team. And the coaching change should come as no great surprise. The fact that they were able to get Joe Moorhead, I think, is a pretty big coup.
Sure.
Joe Moorhead's
absolutely
a name. He's a name. They're not necessarily putting their name in a hat here. They're not putting it out on monster.com and seeing what the cat drags in. Is monster.com still a thing? I don't know if that's
no
still
clue.
Left. But nonetheless.
Recruiter and Indeed?
Whatever they used.
Yeah.
To get Joe Moorhead's, I think, a pretty big coup. So good for them.
I think so too. And we'll see what happens, because he has an ability to sell what he's done in previous places in a manner in which perhaps who he's recruiting against don't. There's not that many coaches in the MAC or lower level Big Ten or whatever that can say, yeah, I helped develop Saquon Barkley. Let's do fun things in Akron. So I think they can get back to becoming a bowl caliber program if he is going to be there for years upon years.
All right, we got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 teams left.
Okay.
Where are we going next? I'm in the mood. I'm in the mood now. Let's do it.
Not one, not two, but I believe 3 Clemson players transferred to this program.
Oh. That'd be South Florida?
Yeah, Jeff Scott's connections, yeah. Including Aju Aju, the once promising but raw Canadian wide receiver, I want to say, at Clemson. It was certainly a year in which Clemson saw a ton of transfers for them going out, much more so than coming in. I think, by the way, the only Clemson transfer coming in at the time I saw, I think, was Hunter Johnson, who was already there and didn't work out at quarterback for Northwestern. So,
yeah. So, okay.
But we're talking South Florida.
South Florida beat Florida A&M and Temple.
Yeah.
Their defense was pretty much the worst in the nation.
Yep.
Quite literally the worst at stopping the pass. Just bad all around. They were 99th in preseason SP+. They finished 110. So not expected to be good. They weren't good.
Mm-hmm.
Jeff Scott, you mentioned Jeff Scott. We were joking around before. I was joking around before, because I'm 14 like that, that Charlie Strong left Jeff Scott an Upper Decker on his way out.
It's what it seems like.
Yeah.
Here's what I can tell you. Yes, you're absolutely right. It was weird, topsy-turvy results. They lose by 31 to Tulane, but also score 42 and lose by 12 to a good Houston team. They ran the ball decently well at times with the Colorado transfer, Jaron Mangum. They may have been the worst tackling team in the country. Like, I don't know what word I should use, but it was real rough watching Bull football last year. And the very little I did. So they make changes at coordinator. It's Travis Trickett coming in from West Virginia, their tight ends coach, and Bob Shoup, who I mean, he's been everywhere at this point, but you assume that he can get them to some level of respectability on defense, especially provided how hard they hit that transfer portal. Basically, all of their transfers, by the way, come from Power 5 schools.
Right.
So given the number of prospects that come from the state of Florida, it's not all that surprising that there is an appeal to return to the state, to go to Tampa, to go to a place that has developed NFL players, that there still are some names there, and that Jeff Scott can say, look, this is what I did at Clemson. Let me help you do it here wearing some green. So South Florida, I don't think they have the administrative support and donor base to really consistently win 8-9 games, but they should be able to, within the American, they should win more than they won last year. Like, this is not a bulletproof conference. The top of it is very difficult, but they should be able to win more games. The roster should be more talented than most teams they're playing against. So I'm optimistic that they can become, with time, because it's still going to take a good amount of time to get this roster to a decent place, that they can also become, once again, a bowl team.
I am pretty excited about the whole Island of Misfit Toys angle here. Because,
sure,
as you said, there are a bunch of transfers from other Power 5 programs.
Mm-hmm.
I like the ragtag group angle. Coming sure. together, putting this, bolting it together, duct tape and chicken wire.
Mm-hmm.
Try to get this program out of the doldrums.
Right.
I don't know if that happens. That might be a stretch. But, you know, we've talked about South Florida in the past. South Florida's had a couple storied seasons, right?
Sure.
So to see that they've fallen.
It's been a minute.
It's been a minute, but to see that they've fallen into these depths is not something that brings me a whole lot of joy. So.
No. Yeah. It was Willie Taggart, essentially. Get on the bus.
Yeah.
Was the last time. So that's.
Yeah.
2016.
Yeah. When we were all younger and full of life. 2016.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. That was a fun team. That was the Gulf Coast offense, not the West Coast. I think that's what they called it, something like that. So it can happen. You can win a ton of games in Tampa. And so it's going to take Jeff Scott really not just hitting the portal, but winning those battles, winning those like higher level or mid-tier 3 stars in state against lower level Power 5 programs, which is what Willie Taggart was able to do when he was recruiting there. So yeah, I think South Florida can win for sure.
Next up,
this, I had no idea where this city was within this state. Turns out, pretty close to Mexico.
Pretty close to Mexico. I mean, it has to be New Mexico State, right?
It is New Mexico State, yeah. Ty, you were just on it today.
I'm looking at this list. There's 5 teams. I'm like, I don't think it's Vanderbilt.
I don't think it's Vandy. I don't think Nashville's close.
How close?
Expected.
I'm doing kind of like the math.
Yeah.
How close is New Orleans to Mexico?
It's Gulf of, but yeah.
Yeah.
No, Las Cruces is pretty close to Mexico. Pretty close to El Paso, actually. And the food, by the way, I looked on Yelp. Las Cruces food options looks terrific. Not a huge place.
So they've got Jerry Kill, right?
So New Mexico State hires Jerry Kill. Things don't work out under Doug Martin, previous coach. And it's, man, I don't know if you can win in New Mexico State because they went to a bowl game in 2017. I think they win the Arizona Bowl, but it's, man, I don't know. Tony Sanchez is their receivers coach, former UNLV head coach. They're all in on Tim Beck, but not the Tim Beck.
Yeah, this was the thing that we talked about on Slack, right?
Former D2 head coach Tim Beck at Pittsburgh State, the Gorillas of Pittsburgh State, D2 school in Kansas. He's running the offense, was at TCU last year as an analyst with Jerry Kill. And look, Jerry Kill has won at numerous places. He has had a very odd career, I would say, given like medical retirements, unretirements, with what he's dealing with epilepsy. But I don't know. New Mexico State, I suppose, could be frisky with the right staff and right ability to recruit, you know, the lower plains and Texas. It's just, as an independent team with weird year-to-year scheduling, they lost their actual best player, probably, or their best offensive player, Juwan Price, transferred to Syracuse, where obviously you remember they actually ran the ball quite well last year at times, so sure, that made sense for him. But tricky place to probably win more than four or five games a year without getting a couple of decent size breaks.
Okay, hold on. We need to rewind. I'm Please still do. Hung up on Bizarro Tim Beck.
Double Tim Beck. Not an unusual name, of course.
No, but this Tim Beck, born in 1964, mm-hmm, the other Tim Beck, the current offensive coordinator for NC State, the guy who had been at Texas and Ohio State and
Nebraska,
Kansas, he had stints all across the country. He was born in 1966. The Tim Beck that everybody else knows went to K-State. This Tim Beck, born in 1964, is from the state of Kansas. So there's a weird Tim Beck thing going on in the water in Kansas that maybe somebody can look into. I don't know. Tough place to win. But interestingly enough, one of the only teams on this list that improved ever so slightly on their preseason SP Plus projection. Because Bill C had them as 130. They finished 128.
Hell yeah. Who finished 130? UMass, I assume?
I did not look. I have no idea. I can look that up. But they finished a little bit better. Otherwise, they beat South Carolina State and UMass.
Mm-hmm. UMass was 130, by the way.
They were 130. Thank you. Yep. They had to play San Diego State, Alabama, and Kentucky.
Tricky.
A little bit tricky. There were some other teams on there that, like you said, independent scheduling. It's not the easiest road here for Jerry Kill. But I like Jerry Kill. And if you're looking for a reason to root for the Aggies of New Mexico State, other than the food options that you mentioned at the top, Jerry Kill's a likable guy. He's a likable coach. He's been through some stuff, and you like to root for him to succeed. So that is my takeaway for New Mexico State. I am not at all that optimistic, let's be real, that this is going to turn around, you know, in any great hurry. But I like Jerry Kill, so let's root for New Mexico State.
Yeah, that'd be nice to see an independent team away from it all. I haven't been to New Mexico in a long time. You ever had Hatch Chili's?
No.
You ever seen how they're roasted?
Hatch Chili's?
A Hatch Chili, yeah. It's a specialty to New Mexico.
That sounds like a rare bird to me.
They're almost roasted like one of those turning bingo cages.
Mm.
Like the fire's underneath and they keep turning it so the chilies are keep turning over and over. Love a good charred chili. I have nothing more to add about New Mexico other than New Mexican food's delicious. And some people are, you know, green peppers and some people are red pepper people.
I've got one for you now.
I'm ready.
This was not a good team, obviously, given the theme of this game.
Mm-hmm.
But this school had six losses by one score.
Six losses by one score from this list of teams. I guess I'll go. It's either Tulane or UNLV. We'll go UNLV because I remember them jumping out to leads and losing in heartbreaking fashion. We'll go with the Runnin' Rebels.
UNLV beat New Mexico and beat Hawaii. Okay. And they were not a good team.
No.
But you are correct. They had six losses by one score or less. Eastern Washington, at Fresno, Fresno a bowl team, at UTSA, UTSA a very good team, also a bowl team, Utah State, another bowl team, San Jose State just missed out on bowl eligibility.
By the way, Utah State, Jimmy Kimmel Bowl champion.
Kimmel Bowl champion, excuse me. Thank you for bringing that up.
Yeah.
And finally, San Diego State, also a bowl team.
Yeah.
So I think the case here, if you're looking at this and you're thinking, Marcus Arroyo, 2-10, okay. But they were, you know, like, I'm not going to say they were an eyelash away from 8-4. That would be a misrepresentation. But to say that if a couple things go their way, they're not in this discussion, that's not at all impractical. Like, they were in a lot of these games. They were also better than their preseason SP Plus projection. Not by a lot. Not by a lot. 122 in the preseason, 115 after the bowls. But I think at least if you look at that slate of teams that they played, knowing that they were close, that shows effort. That should give you some optimism moving forward. Yes, maybe, no.
Yeah, I think the answer is maybe. They're recruiting on a top five-ish level within the Mountain West. It was a small class this past year, but by average recruit rating, they're in that top five area of the Mountain West, which makes sense, right? They're central, they're close to California, they're close to a number of recruiting hotspots on the West Coast where, you know, do you want to start pretty quickly at UNLV or do you want to sit for 3 years at Cal or something like that? And so I could see it's a big city. The state of Nevada is producing a number of better and better players. The football is becoming bigger and bigger in the state. They have a quarterback of the future from in-state who is something like the 50th best quarterback in this class. So that's pretty good. And Harrison Bailey, I believe, transferred in from Tennessee, a former highly regarded quarterback. So perhaps he provides an answer to a question that they're still looking to address, which is quarterback, which was kind of a disaster. So I anticipate UNLV to be an interesting team for transfers, an interesting team on the recruiting trail. And there's a lot of we'll see because they fall squarely under your, I forget if you like frisky or feisty, but they fall under that. They played hard and they do have an assistant coach. I don't know if you looked at their staff, Ty. Mm. They do have an assistant coach who is about to make you feel old because he's already a position coach at a Mountain West school. Nate Longshore,
oh my gosh,
is the tight ends coach for UNLV. Gosh. So former Cal quarterback.
Wow.
Squarely in there. Yeah.
As if Charlie Weiss Jr. didn't make me feel old. Nate Longshore.
Well, he's exceedingly young, too. I don't even know if you know. Is he 30 yet, Charlie Weiss Jr.?
I don't think so.
Yeah.
He could be 18 for all I know. Oh my gosh.
Yep.
Okay. There you go. That's your UNLV running rebs.
Okay. Let's talk about... Okay, of these three teams left, this is clearly the team that has the most promising quarterback and running back duo.
So we're talking Tulane, Kansas, and Vanderbilt.
Yeah.
I'll say Kansas.
Kansas is right. Jalen Daniels, Devin Neal.
Yeah.
Jalen Daniels, freshman or young player, didn't start the season. Devin Neal, definitely a freshman, didn't start the season as well as a starter. Both of these guys didn't. But Kansas showed something, I think, to everybody, but especially in the Big 12, with how they finished out the year. Beating Texas, going back and forth with TCU in the second half before losing that game, giving West Virginia a good amount to handle, that especially given the depths to which Kansas was just operating as a football program, especially, you know, under the last two guys, David Beatty and Les Miles, that to show fight at the end of the season. Now, look, TCU and West Virginia were not in good places as programs near the end of that season. But the maintenance of focus from Kansas players, I think it was Kyron Johnson, who was a force on defense off the edge, and he just kind of popped at the Senior Bowl, I believe. The thing is about Lance Leipold, given how late he came into the situation in Lawrence, that Kansas is simply going to get better on the margins. They're going to hit the portal hard. He's going to evaluate the roster and encourage guys who are not going to play to move on, which is, you know, kind of an ugly part of the sport, but a reality. And Kansas is going to... They're going to be a well-coached program. Talent acquisition is still going to be very much an issue, but if he gets assistants in there and continues to get assistants in there who both in-state and whether it's, you know, junior colleges, whatever, I think we're looking at a Kansas program that will get to a point where they'll lose to the best teams that they play and are going to be able to take advantage of programs who have folded for the season or are inept at a big thing. Like, Kansas will get to a place where I think they'll receive an over-under number, a win total number that increasingly goes up. Maybe slowly. Maybe it's 3.5 to 4, something like that. But if they can build depth, I think Lance Leipold is like that seasoned grown-up head coach that they've been longing for.
What you're describing is sort of a homeless man's Baylor. You're describing a team that's just solid enough to get the job done against teams they should beat.
Yeah, and I don't know how many there are. We have transfers coming in from Ohio State. I say we as a Kansas diehard. Ohio State, Minnesota, Nebraska, Michigan State. And I don't know if any of those guys are actual difference makers, but they've been around big programs, and I think the talent floor is rising at Kansas.
Last season, they beat South Dakota and Texas.
Correct.
Which
classic combo.
Which probably says more about Texas than it does about Kansas, but they were the only 2-10 team in this group to beat a Power 5 team. It was a big deal. Mm-hmm. It was 57-56. It was a wild game.
Yep.
But got the dub nonetheless. The other thing, again, that I look at when we're talking about these teams that lost double digits, how did they fare against some of the best teams on their schedule?
Mm-hmm.
They lost to Oklahoma by 12. Now, Oklahoma was in a weird place this year, granted, but Oklahoma should wipe the floor with Kansas. That should not have been a 12-point game.
10-0 at halftime, I believe.
Yeah.
Rock chalk, yeah.
I remember texting back and forth about that one, like, do we need to watch the second half here?
Yeah.
Lost to TCU by 3. TCU also in a weird spot.
Mm-hmm.
But again, that shows a level of effort. West Virginia by 6. West Virginia, not a world beater, but should have beaten Kansas by more than 6. So I don't know. I look at this team. You know, I'm a fan of Lance Leipold.
Of course.
I loved when Buffalo hired him. I was hopeful that he would get a Power 5 job. I'm glad that he did. I'm very curious to see what he can do in a spot like Kansas. I agree. I think the floor will be ever so gradually raised on this program. And if anybody is going to get them to a spot where the talent is being maximized and they just play fundamentally sound and are solid enough to get back to maybe like some level of bowl aptitude in the next couple seasons, it's a guy like Lance Leipold that's going to get him there.
Do you think they could ascend to sandwich squad?
Sandwich squad, what's that?
That they would become a quintessential Big 12 letdown look ahead sandwich.
I don't know about quintessential, but they beat Texas. They were close against Oklahoma for a while.
Yeah.
So
right there with West Virginia and TCU, two flawed teams, one of whom decided to part ways with their head coach, longtime head coach.
Who's to say they can? I mean, clearly Kansas is not a program that is going to be circled on any of these schedules. So, yeah, they're always a risk as a look ahead, as a letdown.
Yeah.
I think I am optimistic that there are probably more Texas-like wins in this program in the near future. Not saying it will be against Texas, but
right.
Yeah, sure. Why not?
Will people stop knitting atop the stadium?
Can't say for sure.
Can't say.
Can't say for sure.
Because knitting is, it's a nice, respectable pastime that helps you pass the time, because that's what a pastime is, I suppose. I'm not promising that. It's a really nice way to sort of zone out and just concentrate. Final two teams here. Okay, this team is looking to the D2 ranks to help fill out the staff and make the needed dramatic changes on offense.
Is this Tulane?
It is Tulane. It is.
The Green Wave. Tulane was much
weird
worse.
Year.
Much worse than expected.
Yes.
Preseason 55th. After the bowl games, they finished 89th. They beat only Morgan State and South Florida, another team that we discussed earlier. Going to the D2 ranks, sort of low-key brilliant. I love that move.
Yeah, I mean, there's pluses and minuses. Continue.
I just love the move. I love the fact that you went 2-10. You know you need to change some stuff up. You know at a place like Tulane, which, you know, Tulane's had some pretty good seasons. You just know that one way that you can maybe go against the grain and be a little bit different is to go into the D2 ranks. I love it.
Right.
I love it. High risk, high reward.
So you go to the D2 ranks because you believe you can get pure coaching and you find these minds. These are head coaches that that Willie Fritz brings in to, I think it was fill out the offensive coordinator role and a receivers coach role. Also, it could mean you had difficulty looking at FBS assistants and making those hires. Now, Willie Fritz himself, I believe, has experience on the D2 level. And the other concern, of course, is recruiting. It's just a whole different ballgame when you're going down a couple steps like that, where you're not just going to the FCS ranks, but you're going D2. So it's a different experience. Weird season. They were displaced by Hurricane Ida. I believe that was the hurricane that had them move their Oklahoma game to Norman, in which they came back and kind of gave Oklahoma a decent sized scare. And so I think there was hope that Michael Pratt and the Green Wave could be a force in the American, and they just weren't. They just were not last year. And, you know, Michael Pratt is hurt, and just the passing game wasn't there. I don't know. They made changes along both lines. And you mentioned recent success, especially on defense, up front. Patrick Johnson was a force, if you remember, 2-3 years ago. And so I think they can get back to that place. And Tulane, certainly, given the talent in-state in Louisiana, could be an interesting destination in the portal for a number of guys looking around. But, I'm not there with Tulane in terms of dramatic improvement right now. I'm just not there.
So I'm looking back at my preview, because I did the Tulane preview from last season. They had gone 6-6 in 2020, and they were fairly solid across the board. One of the things that we called out is that they gave up a ton of big plays.
Yep.
And all things passing were an Achilles heel for the Green Wave.
Yep.
The other thing that was not helpful for Tulane was the fact that they played an absolutely brutal schedule.
They did, yeah.
A brutal schedule. At the time that we did the preview, it was 20th in the nation. I'm sure that came down a little bit, but probably not a whole lot, because Oklahoma to open up the year on the road against Ole Miss 2 weeks later. The best thing that you could say about their conference schedule is that they got Cincy at home, and they didn't really miss anybody.
Right.
They didn't really miss anybody in the American. So, you know, Vegas had the over-under at 5. It always felt optimistic that they would get there. If you were really optimistic, you could say 7-5, but we weren't really fooling anybody when we made that projection. I didn't make that as my projection. I was on the under here, and maybe not quite to the 2-10 level, because we didn't really foresee the Michael Pratt thing, him getting knocked out. But it was disappointing. But I guess not entirely unexpected that they would come in underneath that, at least that 5 number.
Yeah. And a promising, by the way, promising quarterback running back duo. I wouldn't say as promising as Jalen Daniels and Devin Neal, but Ty J. Spears had a nice year. They busted at some good runs. And Willie Fritz, obviously, with his background offensively, you would expect at least a decently robust offensive attack on the ground. But we'll see. The schedule can't get any trickier in terms of home road splits within the American. Traveling to SMU, UCF, I mean, it was a different UCF team.
But it was brutal.
But man, the offense for stretches last year was a very difficult watch.
Absolutely. All right. So there's I think there's reason for optimism, but it's just gotta maybe squint to see it.
Man, it's really difficult to find the optimism with Vandy. It might be an academic thing with, like, it's just going to be a more difficult transfer destination, which is how a number of these teams can pull themselves out with talent infusion. And Vanderbilt, like, just isn't that program. So there are 3 quarterbacks coming in this class. So, as you like to say, a number of bites at the apple. But I'm not. 6 bowls, by the way, since 2008, two of which were under Derek Mason, but as we talked about in the beginning of the show, they just lose their defensive coordinator to Michigan, Jesse Minter. They were just a disaster all over the field in Clark Lee's opening stanza. And it's difficult unless this is an especially talented self-scouting staff. Whoa, those are some S's.
That's some alliteration, yeah.
Like, this is how we're adjusting things on offense. This is how we're adjusting things on defense. We're moving this defensive tackle to left guard. That, like, it's just going to be a complete overhaul in terms of the way this program is run from year 1 to year 2. I don't know. I these 2-10 programs, if they're going to go to bowl games, they're going to need to find quarterbacks quickly. And it's pretty tricky in seeing what Vanderbilt's roster looks like with, Ken Seals Chevrolet doesn't work out last year.
Yeah.
I don't know. it's not obvious to me how Vanderbilt turns around this this aircraft carrier.
The part that I struggle with respect to Vandy is I really like Clark Lee.
Sure.
And Clark Lee really likes Vanderbilt. Clark
Correct.
Lee really wanted that job. So I don't think it's a situation where he's going to be on any kind of short leash. I think they're happy to have a guy like Clark Lee
totally
there. But it's hard for me to separate out how I feel just as a fan about Clark Lee in the time that he was at Notre Dame. He's a likable guy. He's clearly a brilliant football mind. It's tough for me to separate that out from the fact that it really just does not feel like there's an easy path forward here.
Right.
I want him to succeed in the worst way. I'm with you. I don't know how he does. I don't know what that plan looks like that is going to take advantage of the SEC East. It may be the weaker half of the SEC conference, but in and of itself, right, it is getting better too. So I don't know. Like last season, beat Colorado State, beat UConn, lost by one to South Carolina, had a shot against Mizzou.
Right.
Nothing else was really close. It's not like there are obvious wins each and every year for this Vandy squad. They're really going to have to scrape and claw and maximize talent to the best of their ability, get fundamentally sound to the best of their ability to have a shot. But even then, it's such an uphill climb, even to 5-7 to 8-4 or 4-8, excuse me. Like, it's just not obvious how that happens.
So Derek Mason did a good job of identifying solid defensive players, and Vandy had stretches of playing really good defense under Derek Mason. So I expect something similar with Clark Lee, given his background and his ability to recruit and lean on his time at Notre Dame. It's going to come down to, look, Vanderbilt's found decent guys at quarterback the last, I don't know, 8-10 years. You look at Kyle Shermer and Jordan Rogers, right? Jordan Rogers was Vandy. So those guys can be found. They're in a talent-rich part of the country, in an attractive city to attend college in. Skill, talent, defensive line is going to be tricky. And again, it's just difficult when you are this down to lack a similar ability to hit the portal because of academics. That it's going to hold you back a bit. That said, I'll circle back. I'm confident Clark Lee and this staff. I think he's going to hire smart coaches, smart evaluators. Obviously, you know, Barton Simmons is helping to run that recruiting department and personnel department. Like, they're going to identify interesting 3 stars that they feel like can develop into SEC honorable mention type players. And that's the hope, that he'll get the time, and it's the identification and evaluation and development that it's just going to take time. It's just harder and harder. Like, there's nothing
tough job.
That isn't obvious. It's just difficult.
Tough job. All right. Yeah. Well, that does it. Again, you're 2-10 teams here that we went through.
The thing that everybody was clamoring for.
We had so many requests to talk about this on February the 2nd. We had Arkansas State and Akron. We had Kansas, South Florida, Tulane, Indiana, New Mexico State, UNLV, and Vandy.
I mean, look, the inboxes, we had to buy more storage space because we were receiving so many emails.
Crazy.
Requesting that we
had to upgrade,
discuss
the Gmail.
Small down programs.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's all.
As always, you can write in solidverbal@gmail.com if you were ever so inclined. Don't forget to follow us across all of our social media channels, including YouTube, where we post clips from this show in video form. Obviously, that's what you do on YouTube.
Right.
If you want the full video access, you can sign up at verballers.com, be a premium or certified verballer, and get access to all of the perks, including the new Solid Verbal Labs perk, which we have been teasing for a couple weeks, and will continue teasing out until it is time to make that public in about a month from now.
My only request now, because it's not great SEO to say, here's a check-in with 2021 2-10 teams. Let's go Lincoln Riley issues in LA, comma, Spotify NFT Peloton.
Yeah, no,
how's
we could
that?
Do that. We could.
Okay, cool.
What is the website that I see all the time when I log on to Facebook in the morning? College Football World reacts to Lincoln Riley comment. We could go something like that, might get a couple extra clicks.
I love that. Yeah, really go for it.
Subscribe to the show if you like the show.
Yeah.
We will be back on Friday for the folks at verballers.com doing another round of Brew and A, answering questions.
That's all I have, Ty.
For that guy over there, my good friend, Dan Rubenstein. For myself, Ty Hildebrandt, enjoy the Super Bowl. If you are out there, if you won't be joining us on Friday, I hope you have a safe and happy and healthy party. Hope you enjoy watching the football game, that your team of choice ends up winning the football game. That's all I got. Stay solid.
Peace.
One, two, 3, 4. Those are numbers, but you already knew that. If you want to know what number you're going to pay each month for your car, use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on AutoTrader. They're really good at numbers. AutoTrader.